This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And we're fast closing in on 2020. The year is waning. And this is an important podcast because there's some big changes coming up for you as consumers of supplements starting in 2020. And we're going to talk to an expert on this. He is Brian Womack. Brian is a Senior Vice President for Communications for the Council for Responsible Nutrition, CRN. He's responsible for overseeing the development and execution of the association's overall strategic communications efforts, which I guess means that he's a great communicator, and that's what we need to communicate some of the new changes that are coming down the pike in when it comes to supplement labels. So welcome, Brian. It's a pleasure having you on the program.
Well, thank you for having me, Dr. Hoffman.
So first of all, tell us a little bit about CRN. CRN is not a government agency, correct? But they serve as kind of the responsible voice for the supplement industry. Do I have that correct?
That is. That's exactly right, Dr. Hoffman. We are the Council for Responsible Nutrition. We've been around since about 1973. We're based in Washington, and we represent the more than 150 dietary supplement and functional food manufacturers. We also represent the ingredient suppliers who sell to those manufacturers, and then we have associate members that are connected in some way to the industry. So they may be labs, they may be PR firms, they may be law firms who serve primarily the dietary supplement and functional food market.
And I think the emphasis is on responsible because, you know, there are a lot of calls for stricter regulation of the supplement industry. But CRN has been doing a good job of kind of riding herd on supplement manufacturers to help them to comply with government regulations, but also, to some extent, separating the good guys from, some of the less responsible players. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think that's a very fair characterization. We like to say we represent the responsible manufacturers because responsible is right there in our name. You know, responsible is our middle name. The supplement industry is a very large and growing industry, and sometimes a consumer or a doctor recommending a product to a consumer or to a patient may not know who they're dealing with. So we help to sort of separate the wheat from the chaff, the good guys from the bad guys, as you said, who's actually playing by the rules and trying to do things right. We also help our members advocate, in some cases, for more stringent regulation, which I'm relatively new here. I've only been here about a year and a half, but in my past experiences, trade associations don't generally advocate for more regulation for their industry, but we're a little bit unique in that regard, so we can talk about that too if you like.
Well, yeah, and actually, I mean, that may seem counterintuitive, but actually, by Ensuring better quality control, by ensuring more truthful claims, by getting shady supplements off the market. I think it's good for the industry overall, and I think that's why there's buy-in by many responsible companies to be part of CRN. And you have how many companies under your auspices now?
More than 150 now. The number's always fluctuating a little bit. We vote in some new members usually every quarter at our board meeting, and we've got one coming up soon where the board will be considering a number of new members. So we may have a new figure for you in the new year, but 150 is a good rough estimate.
Okay. So let's get right to it, because there's some big changes coming down the pike in 2020, and it has to do with reading supplement labels. So first of all, you know, what are supplement label facts, and, you know, why is this consequential?
Sure. So the supplement facts label is that box you see on your dietary supplement product. It's designed to give the user an idea of the nutrient makeup of the product. It's got everything from the ingredients, the serving size, the percentage of daily value, suggested use, and other information that all really is intended to promote transparency and to help the end consumer make smart choices. So just to level set what we're talking about, that's what the supplement facts label box is. They've been around for a while. The main regulatory act that governs this industry is called the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act. It was signed into law by President Clinton back in 1994. And as a part of that law, supplement facts labels came into being. It took a little bit longer than just, you know, President Clinton signing the bill to actually implement it. There were regulations that had to be put through, and sort of exactly how it would happen. So they actually came in a little bit later. But that's roughly how long we've had them.
So I think it's fair to say that the labels aren't changing that much, but there are going to be a few changes that might throw consumers a curveball. For example, we tend to talk about certain vitamins in terms of what are called IUs, international units. So everybody knows, for example, the vitamin D, 1,000 international units. That's a pretty decent dose of vitamin D. You can take up to 5,000 international units. Generally, that's pretty well tolerated. But there are going to be some changes in the way that vitamin E and vitamin A and vitamin D and folic acid, now referred to as folate, are going to be depicted on the label. So maybe you can run us through that.
Right. So that's exactly right. So you certainly and your listeners are probably very familiar with international units and what that means. But the FDA found over time that while that was very well known among more sophisticated consumers and certainly well known in the scientific community, that the average consumer didn't really understand what we were talking about when we were talking about international units. It didn't mean much to them at all. So the move in with vitamins A, D, and E that have traditionally been measured in international units or IUs, they're going to move over to being measured just in milligrams and micrograms. So the hope is that that's a little more familiar for consumers. They see other there are other products measured in those units. And so that will help them understand exactly what they're getting of those nutrients. So it's really not a change to what's in the bottle. It's just a change to how it's being described in terms of the units.
So this is really, for some people, this is a little bit like going from, miles, feet, and inches to centimeters, meters, and kilometers. People are very familiar with the IUs. Is there going to be a transition period where you're going to get, in parentheses, the IUs, or is it going to be up to the consumer to, you know, get out some kind of calculator and make that transition? Because, personally, I think this is going to create some confusion.
Well, it may among those who are used to international units and for whom that actually meant something. But for the vast number of people that was really a confusing unit, we think it'll actually clear things up a little bit. But you're right, it'll be a bit of adjustment for all of us. The one thing that might make it a little bit easier is while the units will change from international units to milligrams and micrograms, unless the daily value has changed for one of those, and for A, D, and E, I don't believe there are changes to those daily values. You'll still see
that used to be referred to as the RDA, the DV or the daily value has, it's sort of a change in nomenclature, right? Because there was an RDA in the past, the recommended daily allowance or something like that.
Exactly, exactly. So some of the daily values have changed somewhat. So that's another change that, so you've got the unit change with A, D, and E, and then some of the underlying daily values are themselves changing.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll reflect both, the latest in nutrition science, but also what Americans are getting in other parts of their diets as well. So some of the DVs are going to be changing. And you mentioned folic acid in particular.
Yep, right.
Of course, that's a really important nutrient, both before and during pregnancy. That's been a little confusing the way it's been, or put it this way, it's been ripe for confusion, although not everyone really has realized how confusing it's been. It's been measured as folic acid on the unit. It's going to change now to just be listed as folate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be measured in micrograms of dietary folate equivalent, or DFE. So that actually sounds like a mouthful, but let me unpack that just a little bit.
Sure.
The way folate is formulated really matters. It can interact with the body in a slightly different way depending on the chemical form of it. Mm-hmm. And so before, to know how much you were getting, you both had to understand exactly the chemical form it was and how that was going to interact with your body, which,
we're talking about folic acid versus 5-methylfolate or folicin. You know, there are various forms of it, some more bioavailable than others, in fact.
Absolutely, exactly. So the idea is by using this dietary folate equivalent, it will measure essentially the impact on the body, and you don't have to consider the different formulations, because, you know, you can unpack that and you can know, you know, how it's actually formulated and what that's going to do with your body. Most consumers, that's really asking a lot of them. So the FDA has tried to simplify that.
Okay. So let's look at some examples. Vitamin D. 5,000 IUs of vitamin D now becomes 1,500 mcgs, micrograms, of vitamin D. And that's probably going to be one of the more common iterations of it. Another way to look at it is 1,000 IUs of vitamin D is going to be 300 micrograms. And there's just a little math you do. You simply take the IUs and you multiply by 0.3, or in effect, you know, divide it in approximately one-third to get the microgram amount. So if you're faced with a label where it says it's 3,000 micrograms, that's going to mean that it's about 9,000 IUs approximately. Is that a fair assessment of the vitamin D change?
Yep, I think that's exactly right.
And so with vitamin E, it also depends a little on the form of vitamin E. It turns out there's D-alpha tocopherol and there's DL tocopherol, and they have the slightly different conversion factors from what I can see.
That's right. The form there does matter, but if people are confused about exactly how much they ought to be taking on any of these, you know, the daily value is a great place to look. And if you think you should be taking more or less, you know, that's something, a conversation, you know, we encourage folks to have with their doctor. So it's, you know, you can certainly get out the conversion factors and do some math, but, it's not something to get all wound up about.
Lest we confuse our audience, I misspoke. What I was saying about the conversion factor of 0.3, that's about vitamin A. Okay. So vitamin A, commonly available as, say, 5,000 international units, you're going to basically divide by 3. But with vitamin D, this is the interesting one. 400 IUs, that's 10 micrograms. 800 IUs, that's 20 micrograms. for a pretty substantial dose, 5,000, that's 125 micrograms. There, you're going to multiply by 0.025. Now, I think there are going to be some online tables that help people make that conversion. But I guess people are going to have to get used to this new format. And after a while, it's going to seem natural.
Exactly. Exactly. There'll be a bit of a phase-in period for folks to get used to it. But as you say, once we're over the hump, I think it'll be easier in the long run.
So is this, if you go to the health food store, or if you buy a product online on January 1st, 2020, is that when we're just going to start to see those changes, or is everything going to go, you know, the lights out, complete transition, or is there going to be a phase-in of this?
Well, that's a simple question that unfortunately there's not a simple answer to.
It's about inventory and what's in the pipeline, basically, you know, some products that were manufactured before the new regulations set in.
Precisely. So the compliance date is around not by when you're on the store shelf, but by when the product is actually labeled. Mm-hmm. And there's phase-ins in the regulation by the size of the company. So for larger companies, which are defined as manufacturers who have more than $10 million in annual sales, their date for compliance is January 1st, 2020. So that would be the date that the label has to be affixed in the new manner. Mm-hmm. And for smaller companies, the date is January 1st, 2021. So you could start seeing some in January. Others, it may take another year. And just to complicate things further, FDA has said they're not going to start enforcing against the larger companies on the January 1, 2020 date, but they're going to give them a six-month essentially grace period just to transition and to get into it. And to further complicate things, these dates have been moved forward several times. So some companies made a decision to go ahead and do them earlier. So what I need for people to understand is there could be these labels out there already. And in fact, you could find, if you look hard enough, the same product that might have a new and an old label. And so at least in my mind, I would think, which one's right?
Simultaneously.
You could.
Okay. That would be helpful.
As a quirk of the inventory.
Yeah, that would actually be helpful.
So it's good for people to recognize that could happen. And it's nothing to worry about. It doesn't mean that the older product is problematic or, you know, they need to return it. It's just, it's a result of that phase in over time.
I think, you know, when it comes to the vitamin A, that's fairly straightforward. That's about, you know, the translation is, the new label will be about a third. The vitamin E, it roughly approximates, but it's the vitamin E conversions mean that the milligrams are a little bit less than the IUs. That's, you know, going to be at least in the same ballpark. The one that I think is going to, and the same thing with folate, there's a little bit of difference, but it's a percentage-wise difference. But the big difference, I think the one where it's really going to seem like Sanskrit to some people, is when you pick up a bottle of vitamin D that you think is a potent vitamin D, and it says 125 micrograms. That's your old 5,000 IUs. That's where I think people are going to have to learn a new format.
Well, and the daily value number will be there too. So at least they won't see that radically changing.
Right.
So hopefully that'll remind them. Like as you said, if they think they're getting suddenly a much less potent version, they can look and say, well, it's still my full DV, so what's going on here? Oh, yeah, they changed the units on me.
But the problem with vitamin D is that people are sort of mega-dosing above the – I don't know what the daily value is for vitamin D. I think it's either 800 or perhaps for some – it also depends on your stage in life. I think it's a little more for seniors. That, too – is a consideration, you know, when it comes to daily values, because, you know, infants and children, it's a little different. Women may have a different vitamin D requirement than men, especially in pregnancy. So the daily value is there just one daily value, or are they, you know, how do we individualize that for different life circumstances?
There is just one daily value, but we always remind folks that they should be talking to their doctor, to their healthcare practitioner about their supplement use and customizing, because as you say, it can differ, you know, depending on your life stage, your gender, your overall health, other supplements you might be taking, other medications you might be taking. So we always want to make sure that we're well informed and talking to our doctors, because they've got the best information really about what's good for us, and we want to make sure to take advantage of that that person in our lives, because they're really the best. The best scientists most of us know, frankly, to help us unpack all of this.
Indeed. And that's, you know, sounds self-serving, but health professionals really need to be advising patients about, you know, the right type of supplements they should be taking, because, well, you know, you can't do a lot of harm with ordinary multi. But, you know, when you start using very specific nutrients at high levels, especially if you have medical conditions or if you are taking medication, where there might be an interference potential, you got to be a little careful. Another thing that's changing, and this is kind of interesting, sugar. If sugar is added to the product, you'll see the amount and percent daily value. Well, we really shouldn't be using sugar in most supplements, but from time to time that occurs, so there will be a disclosure, right?
Absolutely. So it's always been disclosed. So you'd always find it if sugar is added to a product in the ingredient list. Mm-hmm. What's new is that it's actually called out now in the supplement facts box, and you've got the daily value amount. So if you know, you know, how much sugar you're allowed to get in a day, you know, it's not that you're trying to get to that amount, so you're trying to stay below it, and your multivitamin gets you a good bit of the way there, you may want to choose a different product. That may not be a product that's going to work, particularly for so many of us. We're watching sugars very carefully. So that's just a additional transparency and assistance for consumers to keep an eye on that.
Great. All right. Okay, we're going to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. And in part two, we're going to talk a little bit more about the supplement label changes, help people make that transition. And we're also going to talk a little bit about the mission of CRN, the Council for Responsible Nutrition. We're talking to Vice President of CRN, Brian, Senior Vice President, Brian Womack. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.